Hello, everyone. Very, very happy Wednesday morning to you. This week, you may know I have been spending part of my time at the Choose Again retreat here in Colorado. I'm not a participant or a facilitator at this retreat. I am the hostess, the logistical support, that kind of thing. And when I have time, I go to the retreat. But then there have been some other things at home I've still been taking care of, like I taught here all night Sunday night. Last night I had NTI group here in town. This morning I'm here teaching and as admin. So there were some other things that I felt, you know, to do. And so when I'm available, I go to the Choose Again retreat. And when I'm not available, I don't, because I don't need to be there all of the time. But of course, the Choose Again retreat is all about that belief. I'm bad. I'm guilty. I'm shameful. I'm dirty. I'm ugly, I'm hideous, I'm a monster. You know, these are all different ways people are expressing the same thing. And Choose Again has a very specific process they use to help people look at that and release that. And I think their process is wonderful. But it isn't the process that I used. I used a different process. And people were asking me about my process, and I realized that, you know, it's very difficult for me to share my process in a brief conversation, because the truth is I didn't do one thing. There were many, many things that came together to help me release that belief. And so, you know, I have this 2-hour teaching slot every Wednesday morning. I thought maybe in 2 hours I could share the whole story. Maybe. If not, there's another half hour later I can turn it into 2.5 hours. But I thought that I would just come here and share how I released that belief, because I have released that belief. I want to say that the way that you know that you've released the I am bad belief is that you don't believe it about yourself and you don't believe it about anyone else or anything else. There is a difference between the I am bad belief and the I am bad thought. That doesn't mean I don't ever see or even temporarily fall for the I am bad thought. I could temporarily believe that you are guilty and judge you. I can temporarily believe that I am bad and judge me. I still have that capability. But what happens is, as soon as I notice the upset and I look at it, I see it directly. It's no longer hidden under, you know, mountains and mountains of different kinds of denial and defense mechanisms. I see it immediately. And as soon as I see it, it disappears. So it's not a belief. It's just a thought. And if I didn't turn my attention to it, I could accidentally start believing it again, I think. But anytime I'm upset, I look, and there it is again, and then just looking makes it kind of disappear. When it was a belief, it wasn't that easy. When it was a belief, it was extremely sticky. In fact, it seemed like a truth, a fact to me. So I could journal down to the belief I am bad and see it, but I couldn't release it. And the reason I couldn't release it is because I believed it. It was, to me, it was a fact. It wasn't even just a belief. It was a fact. It was the truth about me, right? It was the truth. So the I am bad belief means that you believe it is a truth. The I am bad thought may show up even after you release the belief, but it doesn't have the same stickiness and it's easy to let go of. So what I want to talk about today is the steps I went through, the process I went through to let go of the belief. And, you know, my memory's not the best memory in the world. So first of all, I just want to ask the universe, the benevolent universe, to help me recall anything that is helpful, anything that should be said as I discuss this. Also, I just went back and I opened up my very first journal. For the first few years that I was on the spiritual path, I kept a journal. At some point, I stopped that. But I have I think I have journals from 2004 through about 2009. I think 2010 maybe is the first year I didn't keep a journal. And so I went back and I opened up my 2004 journal and I looked for guilt in that journal so I could find where I first started that turnaround. And actually the very, very, very first step in the process, which I now realize is a very important step, I had forgotten about. So if I hadn't gone and looked at my journal, 15 minutes ago, I would have forgot the first step. So I'm grateful that I did that. Let's see. Jim is asking, would you comment on the idea that we are taught a false modesty of speaking one's unworthiness as a way of proving our own modesty? I don't even understand the question, Jim. Maybe it's something I didn't do. I don't even understand the question. So I don't think I can comment on it. False modesty. Would you comment on the idea that we are taught a false modesty of speaking? Oh, you mean like, yeah, I can't even go there, Jim. I'm sorry. It's just stumbling me. So I need to go with the flow. The question is only stumbling me. However, that's a perfect place to start. So I want to thank you for that. When I had the I am bad belief, when the I am bad belief was a belief in me, the way that I would have dealt with Jim's question, instead of just, giggling and saying, I don't even understand the question, let me see, and trying to read it again, and, just realizing that, that I just can't answer this question, and just saying, never mind, I can't, I have to go on, there would have been an automatic judgment in my mind that I probably would not have even seen. And that automatic judgment would have been something like, I'm stupid. Or maybe even also, probably not, maybe even also, I'm a fake. Like, I should know everything and I should be able to answer every question, or I'm a fake. And then because I, wouldn't want to appear stupid to you or me, or appear to be a fake to you or me, I probably would have struggled within the thinking mind to come up with some kind of an answer to that question as a defense mechanism. And now, I don't have that hang-up. That's what that is. It's a hang-up. It's just the most common hang-up in the world. I don't have that hang-up. In fact, one thing that letting go of the I am bad belief makes way for is what I call always following guidance or always following intuition. One thing I've noticed since the I am bad belief has really died for me is that intuition is much, much, much clearer. And the way I sense intuition is like an energy. I mean, I don't know what other word to put on it. The universe provides an energy for what is to be done or even not done. So, like when I come into Awakening Together Sanctuary and I open my mouth to speak, the universe provides the words. I don't have to do anything. And if a question is asked, if I'm to answer that question, the universe will A, make sure I notice the question, and B, provide the answer. If I don't notice the question, it means I'm not to answer it. And if I read the question, but nothing is coming, nothing is being given to me, that means I'm not to answer it. It doesn't mean I'm bad or a fake or stupid, which is how once upon a time I would have interpreted that non-energy. Which what that really means is the energy was always there. The universe was always giving me everything I needed. But when the universe wasn't moving me in a certain direction, like not moving me to answer a question, I had the belief that if I was good, I would be able to do that, and therefore the fact that I'm not doing it is proof that I'm bad. The way I've learned to see these things now is this is just the universe letting me know what to do, what to say, what it wants from me. You know, I'm sure this week with Choose Again, there have been an extremely enormous number of examples. I just can't think of them right now. But I know I've had the feeling this week of moving in one direction, and then because of somebody's comment, which may even be, could be called possibly a complaint, right? Or even somebody's judgment, I feel the energy saying, oops, now turn this way. And so I turn that way, and then something comes up against something else. Oh, turn this way. And once upon a time, I would have been judging me as bad because I didn't think of that, or you as bad for asking for that when it's not provided. Somebody was bad. You know, somebody had to be bad. Either I was bad or you were bad if everything wasn't, quote, perfect in this imaginary definition of perfect. But now what I see is this is how the universe is communicating. The universe is saying, this is not to be done. This is not to be provided at this retreat. This is to be done. This is to be provided. And the universe is perfect. The universe is perfect, not my ideas about how things are supposed to be. And so when somebody comes up with what appears to be a criticism or a complaint, if the universe puts behind it the ability to fulfill that, then I know that this is just the universe's way of prompting, oh, add this to what's provided. And if the universe doesn't provide that, which some of it hasn't been provided, that, you know, it just hasn't, you know, the energy isn't there, it's not happening, then I know this is just to be let go, you know. This isn't to be done. This isn't to be provided. And I tell people, you know, I'm sorry, that's not how it's going to be. It's not going to be that way. hold on one second. Jamie wants in. Now, when I say, I'm sorry, that's not how it's going to be, it's not going to be that way, if a person has the I am bad belief, which pretty much everyone at this retreat does, that's why they're there, well, then one of two things probably happens on their end of the communication. They either judge me as bad for not providing what they think they need, or they judge themselves as bad for, you know, wanting too much, wanting something that's not there. Again, somebody has to be bad. It can't just be, this is the way the universe is moving. The universe is very clean. It's very, very clean. And it moves perfectly. We're the ones that make the judgment. And we make the judgment because we believe the I am bad thought. And again, the I am bad thought can cause me to judge me, but the I am bad thought can also cause me to project that judgment onto you. So you can be bad or I can be bad. But somebody has to be bad if the universe isn't meeting my imagined expectations. If it's not going the way I have defined it should go, somebody has to be bad. So that's the symptom of the I am bad belief. So if you judge anyone, anywhere, anytime, that's the I am bad thought that is doing that. The I am bad thought is a belief if you can't just easily let it go as soon as you see it. When it's just a thought, you can easily let it go as soon as you see it. If you can't easily let it go as soon as you see it, it's a belief, which means you think it's a fact. You think it's a truth. So again, I am here to talk about how to let go of the I am bad belief. Actually, I take that back. I'm not here to talk about how to let go of the I am bad belief because your process may be different. I'm here to tell my story of how I let go of the I am bad belief. And if you hear something in it that's helpful, please take it. But another mistake the I am bad belief will make, you know, in your mind, if you let it, is it will tell you that somehow you should be able to do this exactly in the way Regina did it. And if the energy just isn't being provided by the universe for you to do it in that same way, now you have more proof that you are bad. Again, the universe provides everything. Grace provides everything. So if I happen to share something as a part of my story that just isn't coming together for you, That does not mean you're bad. It means your process is different. The universe is going to move you in a different way. Or it doesn't mean I'm bad. I'm a bad teacher, right? It doesn't mean anybody's bad. So, you know, that whole idea of bad is the false belief. So what I'm here to talk about today is, again, I'm going to tell the story of how I let go of the I am bad belief. I still see the thought from time to time. But as far as the belief, that is dead. And I'm here to talk about that and how I went through that process of letting go of that belief. And if there is anything that is helpful in my story for you, please take it. If there is anything in my story that does not seem helpful for you, please just leave it and know that is perfect too. Okay? That's our contract. All right, so as I mentioned, when I opened up my very first journal, the 2004 journal, and searched for the word guilt to see how this whole process of letting go of I am bad started, the very first step surprised me because I had forgotten the very first step. And of course, now with the clarity that I have now, it was very, very easy to see that that first step was critical. If the first step had not had happened for me, all of the other steps would not have happened either, and I had forgotten the first step. The first step was a redefinition in my mind of guilt itself. What happened one day, I was feeling very, very guilty about something. I don't remember what. It's not in the journal, but feeling guilty was not unusual. I was feeling very, very guilty about something, and apparently a prompt came into my mind and asked me to go look up guilt on the internet to see what the heck guilt was. Like, you know, for the first time in my life, there was an idea that appeared that maybe I didn't even know what guilt was. I thought I knew what it was. I thought guilt meant I'm bad, right? That's what guilt means. Feeling guilt means I'm bad. That's what I thought. And for the first time ever, that definition of guilt came into question. And the way it came into question in my mind was, go look it up on the internet. And so I'm sure I just went to Yahoo and I probably typed in definition of guilt or something like that. I didn't look it up in the dictionary. There's a website that popped up. And the website is www.headcleaners.com. There's a hyphen between head and cleaners. Cute name, huh? Head cleaners. I haven't looked at this website since then. Later I might go back and look at it for fun. www.head-cleaners.com. And then the specific page that my search engine found was /guilt.htm. www.head-cleaners.com/guilt.htm. And what I have in my journal is a paragraph that I copied from that website. And so let me read that paragraph to you. Guilt seems to be a very primitive mental mechanism that was programmed into us to protect us in the future from mistakes we made in the past. How one handles guilt can make the difference between a person benefiting and becoming much smarter versus making that person dumber and or weaker. Since guilt is, for the most of us, one of the undeniable facts of life, it is better to learn to live with it, monitor reactions to it, and capitalize upon it by using it responsibly. I don't know if I can copy that many words into the room, but I will copy it in sections so that you can look at these words. So here's the first set of words. Guilt seems to be a very primitive mental mechanism that was programmed into us to protect us in the future from mistakes we made in the past. Here comes the second sentence. How one handles guilt can make the difference between a person benefiting and becoming much smarter versus making that person dumber and or weaker. And then here comes the last sentence. Since guilt is for most of us one of the undeniable facts of life, it is better to learn to live with it, monitor reactions to it, and capitalize upon it by using it responsibly. Now, I'll tell you what this said to my mind when I read it, the way this was interpreted in my mind. This told me that I had been misunderstanding guilt and misdefining guilt. First of all, I thought guilt, the feeling of guilt, means I am bad. This is saying the feeling of guilt only means I made a mistake. I made a mistake is different than I am bad. So all of my life, and possibly for many lifetimes, depending on how that works, I have been defining the feeling to mean I'm bad, when actually the feeling only means a mistake has been made. And what I realized was guilt could literally, you know, maybe we even need to change the word guilt because it has such a messy definition. We've applied so much to it. But the guilt itself, that energy itself that we call guilt and that we think means I am bad, that's a benign energy that's letting me know I made a mistake so I can look again. We're the ones that call it guilt, and we're the ones that say that energy means I'm bad. This is saying this is just a chemical energy programmed into the human so that the human can learn from their mistakes. This is just a benign energy programmed into the human so that the human can learn from their mistakes. And you know, recently I read a book by Thich Nhat Hanh about Buddha, the teachings of Buddha, I think was the name of the book. And Thich Nhat Hanh talks about regret. He talks about wholesome and unwholesome regret. Unwholesome regret would be the way that we define guilt. It means I'm bad or somebody else is bad, right? If it's projected out. But he says wholesome regret is just to help us, you know, learn, right? Like the other day, I was leaving the post office. It's kind of funny because I always joke with the board members of Awakening Together that, you know, they need to learn a little bit about my job, and we each need to know a little bit about each other's job in case someone gets hit by a beer truck. That's always what I say, because we always said that in the military. In case someone gets hit by a beer truck, you know, no one person should have all the knowledge of their job, because an Awakening Together as an organization is going to suffer and struggle if that person suddenly is gone. So I'm always telling people we need to be able to back each other up in case someone gets hit by a beer truck. The other day I was leaving the post office, and my town is a very, very quiet town, and I've left the post office many, many times, and there's never been a car on that road. And so out of habit, I don't look real well. And I almost went forward without pulling to a full stop and without looking well. And lo and behold, there was a beer truck coming, which I think is hilarious. I almost got hit by a beer truck. But there was a little emotional feeling. You know, there was a little emotional feeling. And that little emotional feeling I can now define as I made a mistake. And that's reminding me that really I need to look both ways at every corner. You know, I can't assume there's not going to be a beer truck coming. But once upon a time, that little emotional feeling may have said, ah, I'm such an idiot. I'm bad. You know, but that was an interpretation of a little chemical reaction in the body that is a part of being human. You know, animals obviously have some type of chemical reaction in their bodies. There's a chemical reaction that tells the birds when to fly south. Somehow they know that, and when to fly back north. Right? There's some kind of a reaction in a salmon that tells a salmon when to go back to the place where it was born and mate again, right? What if we interpreted that little reaction in us that we've called guilt, that we say means I am bad, as just a signal to look again. Pay attention. You made a mistake. You know, what you're doing is not in your best interest. In some way, what you are doing is not in your best interest. Look at that again. And, you know, I use the example of the beer truck. Well, what if I, you know, lose my temper and I scream at someone and I tell someone else what an idiot they are? And then there's that little reaction afterwards, that little chemical reaction in the body. You know, I interpreted that previously to mean I'm bad. I'm this horrible person. I yelled. I hurt somebody else, right? But that's all mental dialogue. You know, what that little reaction is saying is look again. You know, what you just did is not in your best interest or anyone else's. It's just not the best thing. It's not the best thing. It's a learning device. So what looking at this definition did was it allowed me to realize that maybe the first part of the problem was that I had misdefined, misunderstood that feeling in the body. That whenever I felt that feeling in the body that we call guilt, I understood it to mean a fact I'm bad, right? A fact I'm bad. And this is saying that's not true. It doesn't mean a fact I'm bad. It means there's something there to look again at. Look again. You know? So again, guilt seems to be a very primitive mental mechanism that was programmed into us to protect us in the future from mistakes we made in the past. Right? How one handles guilt can make the difference between a person benefiting and becoming much smarter versus making that person dumber and or weaker. And obviously the dumber and or weaker comes about by believing that feeling means I'm bad. I'm very, very bad. Right? If we can look at guilt, that thing that we call guilt, that, and if you really look at it, I mean, pay attention next time you feel guilty, you know, because if you haven't let go of the I am bad belief, you will have the opportunity to look at it. So next time you feel guilty, with this discussion in mind, take the mind out of it. The mind is the one that's saying, this is guilt, I am guilty, I am bad, I'm a fake, I'm a hypocrite, take the mind out of it and just look without the mind, and you will notice it is nothing but a chemical reaction in the body. Even the idea it is guilt comes from the mind, and the idea that guilt means bad comes from the mind. If you can take the mind out of it completely and just look, it is only a feeling. And if you don't have the mind telling you what it is, you don't even know what it is. Except there is that sense. There is a sense there to look again. There is the sense that what just happened or what was just said or what was just thought needs to be looked at again. Right? Another word we could put on it, except we've also abused that word in our society, is conscience. It's conscience speaking, saying, look again. But it doesn't mean bad. It doesn't even mean guilt. It means look again. Right? And in that way, it's always right. It's always right. It's completely pure guidance. Whether we just thought something that was hurting us, whether we just said something or did something that was hurting us or hurting someone else, this chemical reaction knows, look again. And if you can learn to see it as just look again, you're actually going to find out it is the most perfect guidance in the world. It is not a statement that you're bad. It is the most perfect guidance in the world. And that's why if you learn to use guilt appropriately, or I'm going to call it conscience, in this way. I think conscience is a more benign word. If you learn to use conscience appropriately, then you become smarter, as this says. You become wiser. You become more clear. You become more helpful. So it's nothing but a conscience guidance system. It's there to be purely helpful. And we are the ones that have misdefined it. The mind has misdefined it. So that is the very first step for me right? And of course, this last sentence says, since guilt, or I'm going to say since conscience, is for most of us one of the undeniable facts of life. That little voice telling us to look again is an undeniable fact of life. And to be honest, why would we want to be without it? If we haven't yet found the flow of intuition and we're not always perfectly in the flow, don't we at least want that little chemical reaction to tell us, look again, and help us to align ourselves with the flow? We don't even want to be without this guidance system. It is so perfect. So since this guidance system, for most of us, is a fact of life, it's better to learn how to live with it, how to listen to it, how to monitor our reactions to it, and capitalize upon it by using it responsibly. Isn't that beautiful? You know, this was the very first thing I came across in letting go of my I am bad belief, which means from that point forward, I had this to help me. And as many times as I've told the story about letting go of the I am bad belief, I've never told this part of the story because I didn't remember it. I had forgotten it. So I'm glad that I went back and looked at my journal today. The next thing that happened after this was that I was soaking in the bathtub one day, probably contemplating, you know, guilt and thinking about guilt because that's, you know, what I was doing at this point in my life. And this image popped into my mind. And what the image did was the image showed me my personal defense mechanisms that I used to cover up guilt. Because again, I believed guilt meant I'm bad. So I was covering up guilt rather than accessing it and using it responsibly. Let me find that. I have that here in my journal. Let me see if I can find that. I drew a picture after I got out of the bathtub. I need to find that picture if I can. Let me look. Try one more thing. I hate to go by my memory because my memory is not good. I'd rather actually find the picture. Well, anyway, the way I saw it in my picture, the way I remember it, unfortunately, because I can't seem to be finding the picture right now. Let me just try one more thing. Let me type in defense. See if I can find it. Talked about defenses a lot in this journal, but I don't seem to be finding it. So I'm going to have to go by my memory here because I'm not finding the picture that I drew in my journal. But I did draw a picture. Oh, no, that's not it. That's a different picture. I did draw a picture in my journal. And what happened when I was in the bathtub, and this was very spontaneous, was I kind of saw how I hide guilt so that I don't look at it. And again, the reason that I hid guilt is because I believed that it meant I'm bad, and that was too painful to look at. So one of the things that I saw that I used to hide guilt was fear. You know, fear itself actually hid guilt. And I'm not talking about the type of fear, the type of adrenaline rush that might happen if you suddenly saw a mountain lion about to pounce on you. I'm talking about the type of fear like being afraid to face a particular person. Like there was this woman at work then that in my mind I had judged a lot. And every time I saw her coming, I felt a fear. And that fear was covering up, right directly underneath that fear, was the belief that I was guilty, or said again, was that chemical reaction of guilt. And of course, that chemical reaction of guilt was just telling me, look again. You know, look again at how you judge this woman, right? Which is a very benign, very innocent prompt. But I judged that chemical reaction as I'm bad, and instead of wanting to see it, I developed a fear of this woman. And the way I remember it, I wish I could find the picture because I'm sure I'm going to leave some things out. But the way I remember it is fear was the very first defense mechanism that covered up the guilt that I didn't want to look at. Wait, here, is this a picture? Maybe I found it. No, that's a different picture too. I'm still scrolling as I'm talking. Above fear, the way I remember it, was anger. Anger was the next defense mechanism. You know, I would be angry at someone else. This would also be the projection of the I am bad belief out onto someone or something else. That anger was the next level. So when I'm angry, then you could say that I'm two levels away from the conscience, two levels away from the feeling of guilt. And so when I'm angry, I've taken myself far enough away from it that I am not at all looking at the little prompt to look again. I mean, you know, there's a little prompt to look again at something that, you know, I just thought or I just said or I just did, right? It's always guiding me. There's a little prompt. But then I decide that little prompt means I'm bad. I don't want to see that I'm bad, so I cover it up with fear of looking. And then I project it out onto someone else, and now I'm angry. Do you see how the little stack works? So anger was a defense mechanism. What I can't remember is what was on top of anger. And I can't find the picture. I just scrolled through the whole journal, so I don't know what happened to it. But what was on top of that, I don't actually remember. But I do remember the very top layer of my little pyramid of defense mechanisms. And the very top layer of my pyramid was pride. I am better than others. I am smarter than others. I am more responsible than others. And, you know, when you drill down for that, there was something else there. And then underneath that, there was anger. And underneath that, there was fear. And underneath that, there was a misinterpreted conscience. So what happened is, as this little map was drawn for me, in my mind, was I came to see all of my, what we tend to call negative emotions or negative reactions, including pride, which was the happiest of them all, because pride gives you a false happiness. I'm better than is a false happiness. But all of them were defense mechanisms. The only genuine feeling in that whole chain of events was the conscience. And again, it was misinterpreted. So, for example, if I am screaming at my daughter, I'm mad at my daughter for something she did, which was, this was very, very common for me then. I'm screaming at my daughter, I'm mad at my daughter for what she did. Typically, I would have just believed she did something bad. But once this map appeared in my mind, that didn't work anymore because now I knew, I had the knowledge that this was a defense mechanism. And once I had the knowledge that this was a defense mechanism, I was naturally compelled to drill down through the defense mechanisms to the original prompt. And I did that with a process that I had learned in business. In business, it's called root cause analysis. Now I call it root cause inquiry because I'm not really analyzing. I'm just asking questions. The answer seems to come about naturally. The answer just arises when I ask. So one of the first opportunities I had to use this root cause inquiry, and this all happened around the same time frame, was there was this one day, it was in October of 2004, and it was the first cool weather day of the year. And Jasmine was probably 6 then, maybe 7. Yeah, she would have been 7, just turned 7. And I wanted her to wear a coat to school because it was cold. And she didn't want to wear a coat because she's a kid. And we got into this little struggle of me telling her she needed to wear a coat and her saying no. And I think on the outside, we were doing this at the bus stop, so I think on the outside, I probably looked okay. You know, there were other parents around. Whoops. I might. Can you guys still hear me? I'm getting pop-ups. Can you hear me? Okay, good. So on the outside, I think I probably looked okay, but on the inside, I noticed I was getting very, 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 very angry. I was really furious at this kid that she wouldn't just put the coat on. Well, I did, by the way, win that battle and get the coat on her and get her off to school. But now I knew my anger was a defense mechanism. Before, I would have just believed she was wrong and I was right, and I wouldn't even have looked at it. But now it's been revealed to me that anger is a defense mechanism. And with that, I'm compelled to look at it. So I got in the car after dropping her off at the bus stop. I got in the car and I started using what I call root cause inquiry, just asking why. And I start asking why at the top of the story. So the story is, I'm mad at her, right? That's the story. I'm mad. I start with the feeling, actually, the feeling. The feeling here is anger. That's where I actually started, was the feeling. So the feeling is anger. So the first question then is, why am I angry? And the first answer typically comes from the story. Because she wouldn't put on a coat. Well, again, remember, I'm already armed with the knowledge that this is just a defense mechanism. So I know that first answer isn't true. So my inquiry doesn't stop there. My next question then becomes, but why did that bother me? Why did it bother me that she wouldn't put on a coat? And the next answer that came was something like, she wouldn't listen to you. Okay, well, the feeling still associated with that is anger, so I'm still at the level of defense mechanism, I know. So I need to look a little further. Why did that bother me? Why does it bother me that she wouldn't listen to me? She doesn't respect you. Now, as soon as I heard she doesn't respect me, I actually shifted emotions within myself, which means I know now I'm starting to get somewhere. I actually left anger and I went to unworthiness, which is actually a little lower. Unworthiness was one of the defense mechanisms, believe it or not. Unworthiness is a defense mechanism. So now I knew I was a little lower on that pyramid of defense mechanisms. And so I knew I was starting to get somewhere in my inquiry. But I wasn't done yet. I knew that too. So the last answer was, she doesn't respect you. So the next question then was, why does that bother me? And the next answer that came was that if she showed up at school without a coat, others would see that. Others would see that she does not respect me. Others would see that I cannot control my daughter, that I am not in charge. Others would see that I am not a good mother. But the key thought in all of those is others would see. Now, as soon as I got down to others would see, I started really feeling the guilt. The I am bad. So now I know I'm getting much, much, much closer. And so the next question then, I continue with the whys. Every time I ask, I always ask why, but you have to ask the right why question. The why does that bother me? Why does it bother me that others see? And then the answer comes. Because it's true. And your job is to hide it. What's true? Well, I don't have to ask what's true because I can feel it in my body. But for your benefit, I'll ask what's true. And the truth is that I am the lowest scum on the planet. That's the belief. You know, I live in this town. I lived in Acton, Massachusetts, which was a very respectable town. And I moved there so that I could be among the respectable. because I thought if I lived among the respectable, it would rub off on me. It was a part of my mask. Because I already had the belief that I was the lowest person on the planet. But I was trying to cover that up with good career, living in the right neighborhood, having my daughter go to the right school, having my daughter be successful at all the right lessons, you know, piano, Chinese school, dancing, right? And now, my little girl was threatening all of that, at least in my mind, that whole mask I had built so no one would see that I'm the lowest scum on the planet. My daughter was threatening all of that by not wanting to wear a coat. And this is why I was angry. Now, this is the first time that I had drilled down into my defense mechanisms in that way. And so I was shocked, even though intellectually I had already been told this was underneath everything. I'd read it in the course. I had saw it in that little map that I was given while soaking in the bathtub. But this is the first time that I actually drilled down underneath something and found out, oh my God, it's true. It's there. That is how I see myself. Well, what began to happen after that over the next few weeks is every single time there was an upset, I went through the same process. Just to see if it's true, if it was always there. Or was there something else? And I did the process in a very honest way. And as I drilled down into every upset in a very honest way, asking, you know, why am I upset? Why does that bother me? Yeah, but why does that bother me? Yeah, but why does that bother me? I kept getting down to the exact same dirty basement. The belief that I am the lowest scumbag on the planet Earth. Everybody else is better than me. Everyone. Everyone, everyone, everyone. Now, what began to happen after I did this for a few weeks, drilling down into every upset, is that my defense mechanisms ceased to work entirely. So it got to where I didn't even have to drill down anymore, because as soon as I felt anger, I also felt that low-level guilt. It wasn't hiding it anymore. As soon as I felt fear of seeing, you know, talking to someone, for example, I felt that low-level guilt. You know, as soon as I thought of myself as unworthy, I felt that low-level guilt. As soon as I felt, oh, I did a good job here, you know, the pride, I felt that low-level guilt. Like the defense mechanism pyramid that I had built to cover this feeling up collapsed. And although I would still feel those other feelings, they were now always accompanied with that guilt. And as I looked at that guilt, what I found directly associated with that guilt in my mind was intense self-hatred. Intense self-hatred that I had never known was there. And what started to happen, and the way I remember it, is this lasted a couple of months. What started to happen is that intense, the mic is now gone. Is that true for everyone? Did the mic die? Can you hear me? Okay. So what started to happen then was that intense self-hatred was now no longer covered up by my defense mechanisms, and so it became my present experience. And that had never been true for me before. All I could feel was intense self-hatred. And it seemed to color the way I looked at the world. You know, I would go to work, and I would work with people, and I acted normal, by the way. I was acting. I acted very normal. But the whole time, my mind is telling me what a scumbag I am, and it's looking in the eyes of others, and it's saying, and that's what they think of you, too. You know, they've always thought it. They've hidden it, but they all, and all I saw anywhere was hatred of Regina. Except, and this is a very, 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 very important except, except there was this one tiny little thought in like the center back of my left ear. That was telling me to allow this because I'm healing. This little bitty thought was telling me that all of this self-hatred had been repressed underneath all of those defense mechanisms, and that in order to become clear, I needed to let all of this self-hatred rise and go away. And I remember during this period of time, it was as if, it was literally, I'm not making this up, I'm not exaggerating at all. I could taste it in my mouth. I bet you I had bad breath for 2 months. It's what it felt like. I could taste it. This self-hatred had a taste about it. In fact, in NTI, it's called putrid yuck. And my guidance during this time was to do nothing to interfere with the arising of this self-hatred. So for 2 months or whatever it was, I walked about acting normal, responding to people's questions in a normal way. But what my mind was wanting me to do was to yell and scream at everybody and say, I know you all hate me. And you know, it wanted me to go into this most negative downward spiral, which would have resulted in some type of a mental self-destruction, probably end up in a institution somewhere. And in fact, I even remember being grateful that I had that thought telling me that this was healing and not to interfere, because my thought was, you know, if I didn't have this, I would go crazy. And I remember even being grateful for defense mechanisms and projection and denial, because I thought, I don't want anybody else to have to feel all of this. If this is in them too, I don't want them to have to feel this until they're fully ready. But somehow I knew, even though, and don't get me wrong, this was not at all a pleasant experience, but somehow I knew I was ready. I knew in my heart that I was ready, and I knew in my heart that I could not interfere, that I could do that, not interfere, and that I could allow all of this to arise. So during this period of time, I wasn't doing anything but letting it be. I wasn't doing the inquiry anymore. I didn't have to. The inquiry had done its job. The inquiry had uncovered it. You know, I wasn't doing anything but just letting it arise and remembering. I guess what I was doing was remembering that this was healing. I was remembering this was healing. This needs to arise. This has been repressed for a long time. This is healing. It was after that 2 months when I received my calling. So apparently enough space cleared away that now I could really begin to hear what we call Holy Spirit in a much clearer way, because it was after this 2 months that I received that calling where I was in the cavern and I passed out the candles and then I went to the computer and I was asked to write for Spirit and teach for Spirit. That happened after this 2 months. But this does not mean I was done. It means that a portion of it was done. Enough of a portion that now I had a little more clarity to help me. And because now I had a little more clarity to help me, the coaching became a little more clear. But the process was still not done for many years. In fact, I would say the last touch of the process happened here in Pueblo, and right now in my story, we're still in Massachusetts. So many years passed before this was done. But that was the first big letting go process. The next thing that happened in this process was, remember, fear is a defense mechanism against this belief I'm bad. So the next thing that happened was fear started really arising. The majority of the work I just told you about was working on both, was working on anger. You know, every time I was angry, I would do the why journaling. So it was really working at that level of defense mechanism. And so now what began to happen is the fear defense mechanism began to really kick in. And you know, my story supported it because this is around the time when I was asked to quit my job, right? Move to North Carolina. And I didn't know why yet. I didn't know yet that I was going to ride NTI. I didn't know any of this stuff. I was just being asked to quit my job and move. And all this enormous fear started to arise. The fear started to arise around January of 2005. And it was there for, gosh, it seems like it was November 2005 before that period of fear died. So almost a year. There were two things that was happening while the fear was coming up. One was I was still making the mistake of believing that the fear was related to the story. Even though I had previously seen that fear is a defense mechanism, I was forgetting that because the story so supported it. I thought that I was afraid because I was going to have no money and that I didn't know how I would support my daughter. And I think this is one reason why it lasted so long, because I was believing the story. If I had been sharp enough to immediately look at the fear as a defense mechanism, I think it would have been over much, much quicker. But yeah, I thought I had valid reasons for being afraid. Thank you, Kathy. So as a result, this got drug out 10 months. And for some people, it gets drug out years. And probably the key thing we want to realize is the reason it's getting drug out is because we're believing the story. If I had turned my eyes to it as a defense mechanism immediately, it probably would not have lasted as long. But somewhere around the following fall, after I'd already moved to North Carolina, I was already there. I followed all the guidance in spite of all the fear, which to this day amazes me because I was really scared. But I did quit my job and I did move and NTI did start coming. And at the same time, remember, I'm able to write with Holy Spirit because I had cleared up some kind of a channel through that first letting go. So around fall of that year, so now we're in 2005, I began receiving a lot of messages about fear. And I began to look at fear differently. Instead of looking at fear as, you know, legitimate, right? I began to look at fear as just a defense mechanism again. And I began to allow the fear without believing the story in the same way that I had allowed the self-hatred the year before. And as I moved into allowing the fear in the same way, seeing it as just a defense mechanism, something that needs to be cleaned out, something that's in the way, right? In the way of clarity, and nothing but that. At some point, that intense fear just, you know, it just kind of petered out. It died. So now what we've done is we've moved down another layer. Now, anger, which was a primary defense mechanism, has been kind of diffused. Fear, which was a primary defense mechanism, has been diffused. Now what I'm doing is I'm looking face to face at the beast itself, the beast being the I am bad belief. And this happened still for a couple of years, a couple of intense years. And this is where Laurent enters the picture. Laurent's job was to help me with this beast. I met Laurent at a conference in May of 2007. So again, some time has passed. What's happened during this time is NTI is being written, and that's a very useful time. So just to give you the timeline again, it was in the fall of 2004 that I began to discover the defense mechanisms and had the redefinition of what guilt really is. And it was the fall of 2004 that I discovered the self-hatred and let it go. It was January of 2005 through about November of 2005 that I was in this deep, deep fear and then let it go. then all of 2006 is I'm finishing NTI and I'm practicing, and the single quiet thoughts started coming. I'm practicing the single quiet thoughts. So there's lots of spiritual practice happening. There's lots of looking that's happening, but nothing real intense. I'm just skipping to the intense parts. But there's still spiritual practice happening. There's still looking happening. One of the primary things, actually there is something very primary that I'm learning to do during this period of time. One of the primary things I'm learning to do during this period of time is turn my attention from the stories in my mind. That's one of the primary things I'm learning. There are stories in my mind about everything and everyone. And the single quiet thought started coming, and I'm learning to turn my attention from the stories. I'm really getting a lot of metaphysical teaching that's teaching me that the stories are creating my perception of the world, and that I cannot be blissfully happy. I cannot know the truth as long as I continue to believe the stories. And what I'm being given to help me turn my attention from the stories is I'm being given a single quiet thought every morning, which I carry in my back pocket. And when I notice I'm getting caught up in some story about someone or something, I just gently remember within myself, you know, that I can't be free. I can't know truth as long as I continue to believe stories. And then I turn my attention to the single quiet thought of the day and I contemplate that. And that goes on, you know, multiple times a day. If I had been perfect at it, it probably would have happened 1,000 times a day. But in my case, it probably happened 20 to 25, which proves that I am very, very far from perfect, right? But it was helpful because my interest in stories did decrease. I don't hear stories like that in my mind anymore at all. When used to, my mind was filled with nothing but stories. So a primary thing that's happening during 2006 and the first half of 2007 is that I'm learning to turn my attention away from stories and to contemplate wisdom instead. Now, this is where Laurent enters the story now. Laurent enters, it's May of 2007, and I met him, and immediately we began feeling guidance to join together, which was really interesting because, again, I had no physical attraction to him whatsoever, and I had a boyfriend that I was very, very happy with, right? So to be suddenly guided to join with Laurent was a very interesting thing, and of course I had no idea what it was about. Now Laurent also had the I am bad belief, you know, everyone does, and the way Laurent covered it up was with pride, which was at the very, very top of that defense mechanism pyramid, remember? And Laurent and I spent a lot of time on the phone that summer before we actually joined together physically. And Laurent told me a lot of stories about how great he was. And at that point, I believed them all, probably because I wanted to. I wanted to fall in love. But what believing those stories about how great he was triggered in me was, again, the same sense of unworthiness. Now, unworthiness, again, is still a defense mechanism, but it's a lower level one. So this unworthiness started to be triggered. And there are two things that came about that summer, two wonderful things that came about that summer as this unworthiness began to really get triggered by me believing I was about to join with this superhuman, super great guy. One of the things that happened was I began to notice how many times a day I judged myself. I'd never actually seen that before, not like this. I began to notice that my eyes would land on the windows in my house, which weren't perfectly clean, and there was a judgment on me. You know, the eyes would land on this body in the mirror, which was not perfectly beautiful, and the judgment was on me. And, you know, I can't remember all the details now, but I found myself judging myself, it seemed like hundreds of times a day. You know, a piece of dust in the corner, a stain on the carpet, a child that wasn't perfectly obedient, a dog that, you know, was digging holes in the backyard. I mean, just everything was a judgment on me. But what started to happen was I started to notice this. Now, noticing it is different than doing it. Before, I was already doing it. I was already judging myself with, you know, everything my eyes landed on. But now I was seeing it. And I was seeing the judgment. The judgment was still happening, but I was watching the judgment happen with some kind of an awareness. And this awareness seemed to just naturally arise in me. But I was noticing it. And as I noticed it, there was some kind of a realization in me of, you know, no wonder I think I'm bad. That's all that I tell myself all day long. And I knew, you know, wisdom in me knew that somehow if I ever wanted to be free of the belief that I'm bad, I needed to learn to let go of this constant judgment. That I couldn't, on the one hand, tell myself all day how bad I am, and on the other hand, be free of the belief. Because even if I am letting go of it through these wonderful letting go practices that I have with the self-hatred and the fear, which were two aspects of it, right? And the allowing these feelings to come up and allowing them to rise, which was very, you know, honestly, very brave, right? I could have these very brave times, but it's kind of like I was emptying the cup and then refilling it again with this constant judgment. And I realized you can't empty a cup and refill it, empty it and refill it and never be done. That you have to both empty the cup and stop refilling it. So somewhere in myself, I came to realize that if I ever wanted to be empty of the I am bad belief, I also needed to let go of the judgment. And the judgment was a very severe addiction. But I began to work on it. I began to work on it. You know, just practice not judging. And the way that happened, the judgment still came into the mind. You know, they were habitual. They came into the mind and the judgment would be made. You know, my eyes would land on something and there'd be a judgment and I'd believe it. But then I'd see it. And what I started to do was kind of say to myself, I take that back. Like undo. I change my mind. I choose again. And I just started to take back the judgments. And I don't know if it matters, but one thing that was there as an intent always, the intent for taking back the judgments was to empty the cup of the I am bad belief. I just knew it wasn't helpful to have that belief in me anymore. And I knew that the judging had to stop. You know, so again, you know, the way it would work is I would look around at my messy desk. There'd be a judgment of what a slob I was. I'd see the judgment, and I'd say, I take that back. This doesn't mean I'm bad. And this was an inner self-practice that happened for a very, very long time, probably 2 years. But it's one of the things that I was doing. It's a part of this story, and it started that summer. I just would take it back. And then, you know, that also I realized at some point, I didn't realize this immediately, but at some point I realized that when I judged anyone or anything, that it was the same thing. That when I judged anyone or anything, it was filling up the I am bad belief cup. And if I wanted the cup empty, not only did I have to let go of judgments of myself, but I had to let go of judgment, period. And so at some point when I was ready, I didn't do it all at once, you know, dealing with just my own self-judgment was enough in the beginning. But at some point, when I was naturally ready, I began to extend that same practice so that if I found my eyes landing on, you know, someone else or someone else's house or someone else's child, and I saw a judgment of them, again, my eyes would land, there would be a judgment, the judgment would be believed, but then I would notice that, and I would say, I take it back. You know, I don't want that. And again, the reason for not wanting it was because I wanted to empty the cup of the I am bad belief. Sometimes I think people hear these practices and they try the practices and the practices don't work for them. And when I talk to them, I find out that the reason, maybe, the reason the practice didn't work is because their intent was different. Let me give you an example of when it wouldn't work. Okay, listen carefully. My eyes land on my house. My house is a mess. My eyes decide, my mind decides, that means I'm bad. Now I remember this teaching, and I think I'm bad because I can't stop judging myself. And in order to not be bad, I take it back. Inherent in that is the belief I'm bad stays in place. My eyes land on the house. The house is a mess. My mind decides that I am bad, and I believe it. And then I remember this teaching. But somehow it gets misinterpreted in my mind. I'm a bad spiritual student if I judge myself as bad. And I don't want to be bad. Like, that's a fact. If I judge myself, I am bad. That's a fact. And because I'm afraid of that fact, I take my judgment back. That's not the same thing. That is not the same thing. And even though the taking it back still happened, the belief that I'm bad stayed in place. That was even the reason for me taking it back. So no healing occurred. Now listen to the way it happened for me, because it's very, very different. It's a subtle difference, but the intent is so entirely different. The house is a mess. My eyes land on the house. My mind tells me that means I'm bad. I believe it. And then I remember. If I keep believing this, I'm never going to be free of that belief. And inherent in that is a realization that it's not a fact, it's only a belief. And because I realize it's not a fact, it's only a belief, and I want to let go of the belief, I take it back. So in the first case, the story I told you about the person who says, oh, I'm a bad course student because I'm judging myself, I don't want to be bad, I take it back. In the first case, what was inherent in the decision was the belief I'm bad. In the second case, when I said, oh, I'm judging myself, as long as I judge myself, I'm going to continue to believe I'm bad, but I don't want to continue to believe that. Inherent in that is that I don't have to because it's not true. Even though that wasn't said, it's inherent. And I don't have to because it's not true. And because I want to let go of believing something I don't have to believe, I take it back. Inherent in that was faith that it's not true. So it's not the tiny, tiny mechanics. It's the subtle, subtle intent. The intent was somewhere, because of that definition that I read to you guys that I had forgotten about, that was in my journal, the definition that guilt does not mean I'm bad. Guilt is just a warning system saying, look again. Because I accepted that when I read that from headcleaners.com, I now have in me an understanding I don't have to believe this. I'm still very addicted to believing it, but somewhere in me I know that it is just a belief. That I've misinterpreted a feeling. And then I built all these defense mechanisms on them. And there's this big house that needs to be torn down. But now I'm tearing down the house. Because somewhere in me, the first thing that happened in this process was a realization. It's not true, and I don't have to continue to believe it. Now it took years for that house to be torn down. But every single thing I did had in it, inherently, the faith. It's not true. The faith it's not true was what was driving me, not the belief it is true and I got to change or else. Do you see the difference? So for the next couple of years, one of the things that's going on is that I'm noticing the judgments in my mind. The judgments are still happening. I'm still believing them, but I'm taking them back because I realize if I'm ever going to be free of this belief, I can't keep filling up the cup. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, I can see that with water. I can't pour water in a cup, pour it out, and then pour it back in and have an empty cup. It's physics, and it makes sense here, right? Same physics apply. I can't be brave and let go of this emotion. I just got a text. I can't be brave and let go of this emotion of self-hatred and let go of this emotion and fear and, you know, and be done if I'm going to continue believing every judgment that happens in my mind, because I'm going to fill that cup right back up again. And I think this is something else that people don't understand. I think some people will be brave, and they will do the allowing the emotion thing, and they will let it go, but then they fill up the cup again, and they don't understand, well, how come it's not gone? Well, at least in my case, again, more than one thing happened in this process of letting go of the belief. The first thing that happened was I came to see it was just a belief, not a fact. That was the first thing that happened. And from then on, I was going on that faith. The second thing that happened was I discovered my own defense mechanisms. And I saw them as nothing but defense mechanisms. And again, with the fear, I delayed on that a little bit, which is why the fear lasted longer. But as soon as I started to see them as nothing but defense mechanisms, then I was able to look underneath. I wasn't distracted by the fear or distracted by the anger or distracted by the story. I was able to look underneath. When I looked underneath, of course, that's when some of these raging feelings started rising. I was able to allow them, allow myself to be emptied of what had already been repressed. But then I also learned to take back my judgments, change my mind. Even though the judgment still happened, I would say, oh, never mind, I changed my mind about that. I don't really want to do that. With a heart, with an intent, with a faith. Now, the next thing that started to happen was the next big repression started to arise. And this, again, was experienced as unworthiness. So I've experienced self-hatred, and these are all, in a way, the same thing, but they have different flavors to them, just like ice cream is all the same thing, but you can have different flavors. So first I allowed and experienced self-hatred. Then I allowed and experienced fear, right? Now what began to come up was unworthiness. Unworthiness, really heavy unworthiness. And you know, the unworthiness seemed to have a story about it. One of the things that Laurent told me was, he was telling me how he's really raised in, his father is rich, his father owns a import-export company in France, and, you know, they have maids, and you know, they go out to fine dinners all the time, and he's also telling me how he's dated these models and how beautiful every woman he's ever dated is, and, you know, this is all happening on the phone. We aren't together yet, but I'm believing all of this. He's really telling me he's better than me because that's his defense mechanism, and I'm believing it. That's what's going on. You know, and he's not doing anything wrong. He's just being afraid of his own I am bad belief. And he's afraid that I'm the one that's going to see that it's true. So he's, you know, telling me how great he is before he arrives. But I'm believing it. And I'm comparing myself to his story, and I'm finding myself severely lacking. Yeah, I've always had cellulite on my thighs and butt ever since I was young, 20 or so, and as I've gotten older, it just increased. And for me, that cellulite was always proof that I was unworthy. And now I have this guy telling me how he's dated all these gorgeous models. And I'm thinking, you know, this is a guy I'm being guided to be in couple relationship with. He's going to see me naked, and then he's going to know the truth about me, that I'm unworthy. And as I start thinking about this, this fear again starts arising. And I went back into the practice that I used with the self-hatred and the previous type of fear. This one is the fear of being seen as unworthy, though. It's kind of a different fear, still fear, but a different fear. I do the same thing I did then. I allow it. I allow it. I don't interfere. I see, even though it was horrible, this was probably the worst of the three, to be honest. At least that's the way I remember it. Like the first two were bad, but this one was even worse. I remember laying like in the fetal position in bed, allowing this fear of how unworthy I was and that it was going to be seen to arise. And as this fear came up, and I kind of, things started to be revealed in my mind naturally as I did nothing and just let it come up, just laid there and let it come up. And what started to be revealed in my mind was that this wasn't really about Laurent at all. That what I was really afraid of was that God saw me this way. What I was really afraid of was that, you know, if I did all the spiritual practices in the world, surrendered completely, became completely vulnerable, and stood before God and say, God, here I am, take me. God would look at me and say, not you. Everyone else, but not you. And then what happened as I continued to stay with the fear and unworthiness, this strong, strong emotional feeling, without trying to interfere with it, right? Just allowing it to run its course. I went beyond that, and I saw that there was a greater fear than that, a greater fear than the rejection of God. Because God is still an other. And believe it or not, when an other protects, when an other rejects you, there's a bit of a protection there. You can use your anger defense mechanism and get mad at the other. I can get mad at God. I can hate God, right? Because God is the one that rejected me. So what I saw as I stayed with this fear is that I went beyond that point in the mind to where there really was no God. There was only oneness, but we're not talking divine perfect oneness. We're talking, I call it big ego. There's no more other. There's just oneness, but this oneness fully believes ego. Big ego. And what I saw was that what I feared most of all at a level beyond the human, at a level of what we would call mind, what I feared most of all is that I would at some point fully reject myself. And since you can never get away from yourself, ever, no matter where you go, you're always there. Since you can never get away from yourself, if you fully reject yourself, you then have pure hell. And that if there was any escape from hell at all, that escape would be permanent destruction of self. And I saw this as the deepest fear in the mind. Like, there's no fear deeper than this. This was the basement of all basements. But once I saw it, the amazing thing happened. And this is a miracle. The next thing that came was that could never happen. And somehow I knew that could never happen. I've never ever feared that exact flavor of this self-hatred, I am bad belief again. I just knew that could never happen. There could never be an all-out, total self-rejection. But somehow that still didn't clear away my belief in rejection itself. It only meant rejection could never be total, right? There would always be hope. It was later that the belief in rejection itself was cleared away, and I can talk about that. So see how this happened in many, many, many stages. Another thing that happened, hold on, let me get a drink, that's related to this story. Another thing that happened was I was invited onto a particular Yahoo, no, I wasn't invited, I was asked by Spirit to start posting on a particular Yahoo group that I'd never posted on or even thought about posting on, but I felt clear guidance to do it. And the first day that I posted on this Yahoo group, I was told that I wasn't welcome there. It was a very Course in Miracles fundamentalist type group. And, you know, they knew me as the one who had written NTI, and they thought Helen Schuckman was the only legitimate scribe and I was a big fake and they didn't want me there. And my guidance was to go ahead and post there anyway, post daily. Whatever I was posting on the Peace of God, which during this time period I posted on the Peace of God every day, whatever I was posting on the Peace of God to post here too. And so I did. And even though these people could have, you know, blocked me from the group entirely, could have not allowed my posts, they did. They allowed my posts. But then what they would do is they would, you know, comment on them, you know, in kind of an attacking way all the time. And this actually, you know, I'm kind of out of order now. This actually happened in November 2006. It's just a part of the story I forgot. We're in the summer of 2007, so I'm kind of going back to a little something I forgot, but it's important. So I posted every day, and I noticed, you know, all of my desire to defend myself against, you know, their quote attacks on what I was writing. But somehow I knew intuitively that I was there to learn to let go of defense. Defense, of course, is another defense mechanism, right? And I was there to let go of that defense mechanism, defending myself. And something else was going on at the Peace of God around the same time, and I was also letting go of defense there too. People were, you know, saying things about me and saying things about NTI, and I was letting go of defense everywhere. That was my job. Well, after about 3 months, you know, doing this on the Peace of God and this other Yahoo group, I was actually getting pretty good at not even feeling the desire to defend. I was reading everyone's posts and reading everything they said about me and everything they said about NTI, and the feeling to defend started to not even come up anymore. Like, I was okay. People could say whatever they wanted, and I was fine. And then what happened was someone came onto this Yahoo group, and they started their post by saying, "Hi, I'm new. I'm a new student of A Course in Miracles." And then very excitedly wrote about, you know, what they had read that day and what they thought it meant. And these people who had been commenting on my post commented on their post, again, in kind of an attacking your wrong way. And even though I had learned not to defend me, somehow I saw this innocent new course student, you know, being attacked by people in a course community. It just got to me, and I let down my guard and I jumped in and I defended that person. And after I did that, this enormous guilt arose in me. This enormous, enormous, enormous guilt. And I would say that the idea that seemed to trigger the guilt was, you know, Holy Spirit had sent me here to learn to let go of defense, and I had failed. So it was really the idea of I had failed Holy Spirit, or I had failed God. And so this enormous, enormous guilt came up. And of course, this guilt had the idea I am bad strongly attached to it. And this was another time when I just allowed it. I had that little idea in my ear telling me this was healing to allow it. And I just allowed it. And in fact, this guilt was so strong when it came up, I wanted to die, but dying actually wasn't even good enough. I wanted to die and then be erased from everyone's memory so that nobody even remembered I ever existed, because I felt so guilty. Even the thought of somebody remembering that I once existed was too much to bear. I wanted to be just completely erased, like I never happened. That's how guilty I felt. Enormous guilt. And I'm certain that it was all just repressed guilt, because, you know, what I did, you know, defending someone, and I even defend them politely, you know, what I did, you know, did not warrant all of this guilt. So it was really just the opening of all of that repressed guilt. And I did the same thing. I just let it arise. I didn't interfere. So I had, you know, several episodes of letting really intense repressed stuff come up. It happened over years, not all at once. You know, this thing this year, this thing this year, this thing this year. Didn't happen all at once, but it happened several times, and I would always get out of the way and just let it come up and remember this is healing. That was the emptying of the cup, emptying of the repressed stuff. And at the same time, I was learning not to fill the cup up again, right? Hold on, I have to deal with this text. This doesn't make any sense. Hold on. This has to do with stuff that's happening at the Choose Again retreat. Remember I told you I'm logistics? Well, never mind. I'll let it be. It doesn't make any sense, but I'll let it be. So again, what's happening in the story, of there's been several times when really heavy repressed stuff has come up. And when the really heavy repressed stuff comes up, I do nothing. I let it come up. And then the other thing I'm learning to do is to take back my judgment so I don't refill the cup. Now, the story of Regina and Laurent is a very, very long story. There's a lot of things that happened in that story. But I would say I got into advanced letting go of thoughts when I was with Laurent. Advanced letting go of stories, advanced letting go of judgments. And then what also happened, you know, at some point is he did reject me. That's what happened in form. He did reject me. And again, because there were still parts of this I am bad belief there, I believed I was rejectable. And I suffered, I hurt, because again, it's bringing back all of this unworthiness stuff again. It's still there in spite of everything I've been doing. It's still there. You can always tell when it's still there. But this was the story that many of you have heard, where Holy Spirit guided me not to believe that I was suffering because he had rejected me, but to realize I was suffering because I believed I was rejectable, that that was the cause of my suffering. And Holy Spirit told me that every time my mind started to tell me that I was suffering because he rejected me, just to say to myself, it is not Laurent that he is hurting me. It is just my own belief in my rejectability, right? And just keep saying that. And I did this again for like 2 months. You know, none of this stuff was overnight. Not for me. I'm not saying it can't be, but I'm saying it may not be. But after about 2 months of every time my mind started to tell me that he rejected me and that's why I hurt, and me saying, it's not Laurent that is hurting me, it's my own belief and my own rejectability, right? After about 2 months of that, that idea just died in me. It just died. Somehow I can't explain it, but I quit believing in rejection altogether. I'd already let go of the idea of rejection without hope through that experience I told you about, where I was before God and then beyond God. But now I even let go of rejection, the idea of rejection completely. And I started to see really, really, really differently after this. I started to see that no one ever rejects anyone and no one ever judges anyone, even though it appears that way. I started to see with absolute clarity that the only thing that's happening is people are believing their own thoughts and acting on them. And this was really the beginning of the end for me. The story doesn't have much further to go after this. You know, once I let go of that belief in my rejectability, somehow that was like a final stage of the big stuff. Even though I'd gone through many stages, it was like a final stage in the big stuff. And after this, I really started to see differently. For the first time, in a very clear way. And I knew that no one actually judges anyone ever. I mean, people can look me right in the eye and you know, tell me, you know, appear to judge me, tell me what they believe about me, and I am not offended because I know they're only believing their own thoughts. I know. It's not just intellectual. I know it has nothing to do with me. And I also know they're the ones that are suffering. And I see it with compassion. So once I let go of this belief in rejection with Laurent, you know, that was a major shift. And I've never had any of this big, heavy stuff ever again. But that doesn't mean I was completely done with the belief. It still had a little hold on me. And so the little hold made itself apparent about 9 months after I let go of the belief in rejection. And this is when Laurent left, and I was okay with Laurent leaving. You know, even again, it appeared to be a rejection. He said he didn't want to be with me anymore. I didn't feel that, because I really am truly beyond that. So I didn't feel rejected. I just knew he was believing his own thoughts and thought he wanted something else, and I let him go in love, you know, so that was easy. But somehow when Laurent left, I also quit being as vigilant with my mind. Laurent had been a real challenge for me, and because he was a real challenge for me, I had to be really, really vigilant with my own mind, really vigilant at not filling up the cup again, really vigilant at letting go of judgments, really vigilant at not believing stories. And after Laurent left, and it seemed to get easier in the house, I actually became less vigilant. And so guess what happened? The cup started filling up again through my own lack of vigilance. And once the cup started filling up again, I started experiencing the belief again. And what happened in form was another round of, you know, apparent attackers. There was a group of people that started saying that, you know, the peace of God was a cult and that Dove was the cult leader and I was the number two person, and, you know, the only thing we were interested in was the money and, you know, and, you know, just all kinds of stuff, which, you know, if somebody said that stuff now, I would giggle. But because I had been filling the cup up again with judgments and not being vigilant, the I am bad belief was still there. It wasn't dead. So I started to reinforce it within myself. This started to hurt. And I really noticed it when, we went on vacation and every morning I was getting up and checking to see what these people were saying again. And then I'm walking around vacation, not even enjoying the vacation, just thinking about what these people are saying. And I began to feel a level of suffering that I hadn't felt in many months, not since I'd let go of the belief in rejection the winter before. And so when that level of suffering came back, I knew something was wrong. I knew I needed help. And so I said a prayer to Holy Spirit, and I asked Holy Spirit to please send me something that would take me to the next step. And this is how Inner Ramana came about. And so the teachings of Inner Ramana is what finished this job for me. And the primary purpose of the teachings of Inner Ramana, well, there were two primary purposes, I would say. The primary purposes of the teaching of Inner Ramana were, number one, to teach me not to listen to the mind at all. And number two, to help me to recognize what true self is beyond mind. See, up until then, I had not had any taste of true self beyond mind. I was doing a lot of letting go of a false belief in a lot of different ways, but I had had absolutely no taste of what true self is. So I still was fully identified with the mind as me, even though I was learning to clean up the mind and I was learning to use the mind differently and to not listen to a lot of the things the mind said and you know, only to listen to Holy Spirit through the mind, right? Inner Ramana started to introduce me to that which was beyond mind. And Inner Ramana taught me to live on, I started this 2 hours talking about how the energy is there to do something, right? Inner Ramana taught me to find that energy and follow it. That's the surrender aspect of Inner Ramana. What am I to do? What am I to say? What am I to think? How am I to see this? How am I to respond to this? Right? That's teaching you to find the energy of the universe and follow where the energy is moving you without listening to what mind thinks should be and what mind thinks should be done. And also the mantra is further help in letting go of stories, you know, saying I am that I am instead of listening to the stories in the mind. And then the self-inquiry at the end helps you to get in touch with that which is beyond the mind, which is your true self. And somehow through these practices, because the I am bad belief comes from the mind itself, remember, that which defines the conscience chemical of look again, right? That which defines it as guilt, and that which says, and guilt means you're bad, that is the mind. So when you learn not to listen to mind at all, you learn to just follow the energy of where the universe is moving you in a mindless way, and you learn to recognize the true self and start focusing on that. Well, in that, there is no I am bad belief. In that, there is no guilt. If a mistake is made, there may be a look again prompt. But there is no guilt. There is no I am bad. Right? It's not there. It doesn't exist beyond mind. Now, of course, you know, I practiced with Inner Ramana for a few years, you know, and I spent a whole year with the 7 steps to awakening, you know, a year of, I call it silence, where I was spending every day, several hours a day with the 7 steps to awakening, which basically is the same teachings. And again, a lot of practice went in that direction for a lot of years. But what seemed to happen just kind of gradually is there became less and less and less attachment with mind. And as there's less and less attachment with mind, there is no guilt, no I am bad, because that exists only at the level of mind. In fact, the way I look at it is the first thought in mind is I. The second thought in mind is I am bad. But if you're not paying attention to mind, you don't have I and you don't have I am bad. Now the question then becomes, could I have gone to letting go of mind through self-inquiry and surrender without having gone through everything else that I just told you about, learning to let go of judgment, learning to let go of stories, allowing the purification of repressed energies? And I would say, maybe someone can, but apparently I couldn't. And of course, do I judge myself as bad for that? Hell no. Do I judge myself as good? Hell no. I accept what is as what is. You see, that's beyond mind. I did something the other day in the Choose Again circle. There's one particular person there that I know well, and she's very afraid of healing. Very, very afraid of healing. And she always wanted to, she always wants to escape healing. Even though she thinks she wants to heal and she'll show up to a point, then she turns and runs. Right? And so they were doing a process which involved her, which was a healing process. And I could tell that she wanted to turn and run. So I ran over and I held her hand. I looked her in the eyes and I said, do you know why you don't want to do this? I said, it's because you believe it's true that you're bad. And I said, so you need to do this. And I coached her through it. Well, of course, I was whispering to her, so nobody heard what I said. And everybody interpreted my action of running over and holding her hand differently. So afterwards, that started about a big discussion. Some people said, oh, I think what Regina did was beautiful and was good. And other people said, oh, I think what Regina did was bad. She should have just left her on her own. And, you know, there's all this discussion. Was what I did good or was what I did bad? And I started to look at that for just an instant, like the question was what I did good, was what I did bad. And the prompt came in, don't do that. Don't go back to that. Don't judge it as good. Don't judge it as bad. It is just how you moved. It's what the energy did. And you see, if you're not judging things as good or bad, if you are beyond mind, you cannot have I am bad. But another thing that happens, you know, hold on, Jamie wants outside, then I'll come back and tell you about the other thing that happens. Another thing that happens in the spiritual community is what some people call spiritual bypassing. And that's where people grasp a teaching that they think sounds advanced, and they start to pretend like that teaching applies to them, to pretend like it's true for them. But what's underneath that is still the belief I'm bad. So, for example, you know, I'm just now telling you, and I'm telling you a truth. What I'm telling you is absolutely true. When you are beyond mind and you accept everything that is as it is without a judgment or good or bad, there will be no more I am bad belief. It's impossible. It's impossible. That's a truth. What some people will do then is start pretending that's true for them. They'll start saying, I don't judge anymore. They'll start saying, I don't get angry anymore. When actually it's a big fat lie. And the disadvantage of the lie is that underneath that is still the belief I'm bad. And every time I say, I don't get angry anymore. Every time I say, I don't judge anymore. Every time I say, I don't believe in mind anymore. Because I'm lying to myself, because I believe I'm bad, I'm actually reinforcing I'm bad. I'm filling that cup up to overflowing. So, could I have gone directly to the teaching of Inner Ramana and rid myself completely of the I am bad belief without going through the purification period, without learning to let go of stories, without learning to let go of judgment? Obviously, I couldn't because I didn't. Could someone else? Yes, I bet someone else could. Can everyone? Gosh, I doubt it. And is it helpful to lie to yourself? Absolutely not. You're never going to get rid of the I am bad belief through lying to yourself. Hell no. You're never, ever going to get rid of the I am bad belief by lying to yourself, because you know what's underneath the lie is the I am bad belief. So you actually reinforce it through the lie. So I can't tell you what your honest process is of letting this go, but I do know there's an honest process, and the only way to really do it is to go through that process all the way from beginning to end without shortcutting anywhere. And maybe your process will look a lot like mine did. Maybe your process will look completely different. The only thing that needs to be the same is you need to go all the way through it, whatever it is, no matter how short or how long it is. You need to go all the way through it with self-honesty, with attention, with faith. Faith that this is healing. This is healing. You need to do whatever you can to not reinforce the I am bad belief within yourself. Lying to yourself is reinforcing it. Pretending to be spiritually advanced when you're really not. I mean, there's an honest way to get to seeing the way that I see and beyond, because I'm not the highest level of seeing by far. But I do see drastically different than the way I did before. There's a truth to that. But I also know that as I come in here and I speak that truth, I see those who copy me for whom it's not true. I see. And I don't judge it. There's nothing to judge there. But I understand it's not helpful. It's not helpful at all. And if you have a little feeling of, quote, guilt, because somewhere inside yourself you know you're spiritual bypassing, remember, that guilt is only a look again. Look again. It's trying to help you to have an honest way of seeing differently. It's not telling you you're bad. It's not saying you're bad because you've been pretending. It's just saying look again. Only the mind is interpreting it as you're bad. I'm not saying you're bad. I don't believe you're bad. I truly don't. But it is a common error. It is a common mistake, and it does need to be looked at again. Because it's a delay mechanism, it's a defense mechanism, and underneath it is this great big full-blown belief that you are the scum of the earth. You are the one. Right? Just like I was the one. You are the one. And you don't need to carry that around because it's not true. You don't need to lie to yourself and pretend like you're more spiritually advanced than you are, because it's not true that you're bad. You're allowed to be right where you are. And in fact, the way you're going to heal from that belief the fastest is to be right where you are fully and honestly. So, in summary, well, actually, I got one more little piece of this story. The last time I remember the I am bad belief coming up as a belief. There is a last time. The last time I remember the I am bad belief coming up as a belief was probably in 2010. We were about to go to Israel for the first time, and I was taking Jasmine with us. The trip was in September of that year, which is the beginning of the school year. And I was taking Jasmine out of school for 8 days to go to Israel. Well, at her school, if you miss 10 days or more than 10 days, if you miss more than 10 days, you automatically fail, no matter what. That's the rule. And even though I had gone to her principal and he had said, don't worry about it, this fear showed up in my mind. That, you know, I would take her out for 8 days in September and then she would get sick or something during the year. She only had 2 days to spare. If there was one more day, she would fail eighth grade and hate me for the rest of my life. That's the story. And I felt a lot of guilt and a lot of fear about taking her to Israel. And so I sat down and journaled. Remember I said I haven't journaled since 2010? Maybe this is why. Because there was nothing else to journal after 2010. The belief died. I sat down and I journaled. And of course, as I asked myself, why am I afraid to take Jasmine to Israel, right? Because she might fail. Well, why does that scare me? Because she'll hate you forever if she fails eighth grade. Well, why does that scare me, right? I got all the way down to, for the last time in my life, the I am bad belief. Only what happened this time was different than whatever happened, than what happened any other time. I looked at it and I said, oh, that again. Just like that, oh, that again. And I put the notebook down and I've never believed it again. Oh, that again. You know, it was just like I had to look at it one more time. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, that doesn't mean I don't see the I am bad thought. But there's a difference between the I am bad thought and the I am bad belief. And let me give you an example. This week I saw the I am bad thought. We were doing an exercise at Choose Again, which involved gazing into each other's eyes, right? Gazing into each other's eyes. And I was gazing into Nikki's eyes. And I found that I couldn't do it comfortably. I was uncomfortable gazing into her eyes. And so I asked the question, right? I did what I do. I still do the looking. I always do the looking when I'm upset. Always. So I asked the question, you know, why am I uncomfortable staring into Nikki's eyes? And the answer came, because you're afraid of making her uncomfortable. Well, the next question, why would it bother me to make her uncomfortable? Because that means you're bad if you make someone else uncomfortable. Now, the difference between the I am bad belief and the I am bad thought is that as soon as I saw it, I let it go and I stared into her eyes until they told us to stop without having any more problem. So the difference between the I am bad belief and the I am bad thought is that the I am bad belief is very, very difficult to let go of because you believe it. You think it's true. When the I am bad thought appears, but the belief is gone, you see, ah, that again, and you let it go. Oops, I can't snap with this finger yet. Like that. I can't snap with my right hand yet. One of the few things I still can't do with the hand, the arm, the wrist that I broke. But I can snap with the left. So that's the difference between the belief and the thought. The thought has not quit arising sometimes. Oh, you can snap, Kathy. Kathy can snap. She broke her wrist after me, but not as bad as me. Yeah. Fortunately, not as bad as me. Yeah. The I am bad thought, I don't know when that quits coming up because it hasn't quit coming up for me, but it comes up rarely. By far, you know, 95%, I notice situations where once upon a time there would have been an I am bad belief and there is not now. It's like it's clean. Life is clean. And like I said, I'm just following the energy that the universe provides for me to follow. But every now and then, it still shows up. And all I have to do is look at it and giggle it away and it goes away instantly because it's just an echo. It's just a thought of a belief I held to for a long, long time. But it's no longer a belief. And maybe someday it will quit showing up altogether. Maybe it will, as long as there is an I, because I do still have an I belief here. The I belief is still present, although I'm not always listening to it. It is still present. So maybe as long as the I belief is there, the I thought remains to some degree, right? And I haven't let go of the I belief. Notice I'm using the word belief. I have not let go of the I belief, just the I am bad belief. Another thing about letting go of I am bad is you can be very honest about where you are spiritually. You don't have to lie. You can say, yep, I made a mistake. Yes, I looked at that and changed my mind. I decided to do that differently. Yes, I have not yet let go of that. I can see I haven't. You can also look at others and you can see where they're still believing. And I think the reason you can do it is because you can do it without judgment. Because you don't believe they're bad for it, right? It's a clean looking. You can look at yourself and you can look at others. It's the same. I can see myself and I can see others in a clean, non-judgmental way. This is the way Jesus is. You know, people say, some people say, not all. Some people say, well, you know, Jesus doesn't see error. Well, if that's true, why did he give us A Course in Miracles? He sees error. It's just not overly meaningful to him. It doesn't really mean anything. He knows we're suffering. He wants to guide us out of suffering, but he doesn't judge us. He doesn't see us as bad. He doesn't see himself as a failure, as a savior. you know, that's all gone. But sure, you can see. You can see clearly. You can see when people are holding on to things. You can see when they let it go. But it's clean seeing. Non-judgmental seeing. So again, in order to let go of the I am bad belief, I went through a lot of different processes. And they all just happened. I didn't make anything happen. I didn't make those feelings come up, like the self-hatred feeling. It came up, right? Yes, Jolie Boy is saying seeing it without identifying with it. Yeah, I would say identifying and believing are the same thing. So yeah, you can see it and not identify with it or not believe it, right? Unpolluted sight. But what I was about to say is, in summary, you know, a lot of things happened in my process of letting go of the I am bad belief. The first thing, that happened, which I forgot until this morning, and maybe it's, you know, most important, the first thing that happened was I came to see that the I am bad belief, the belief in guilt itself, was just a misinterpretation. You know, just a misinterpretation of a valid chemical reaction in the body that's just saying, hey, look again. A very pure and wonderful guidance intended to keep us safe and intended to keep us, you know, moving in the direction of our best interest. So the first judgment I let go of was the judgment of guilt itself. I quit judging guilt as bad. I quit judging conscience as bad. And I've always been able to use the word mistake since then. I know some people can't even use the word mistake. I'll be teaching and I'll say, we know we make mistakes, and people say, there's no such thing as a mistake. And I see the energy that they're saying that with, and I know they're afraid of the idea of making a mistake because they think it means they're bad. But it's not true. We make mistakes. I think the perfectly enlightened make mistakes. They forget to stop completely at the stop sign, and they almost get hit by a beer truck. And they go, oh, something in them, some little chemical reaction says, oh, you know, look again. You should stop completely and look both ways at stop signs, right? But that little reminder that we interpret as guilt, the little reminder that we added I'm bad and we added I'm stupid and we added I'm a fake and we added all that other stuff too, that's all mind. And so when you let go of mind and you learn to just follow the energy of where the universe is moving you and you learn to trust all things as they are, There will be no more I am bad belief, although you still may see an echo of the belief as the thought. All you need to do is notice for a second you fell for the thought, and the second you let it go, you're free. It's easy. It's nothing. So that's the end of my story. And what I'm going to do is turn the mic over to Christopher. Good luck to all of you all with letting go of your I am bad belief. It is not true. Bye.